deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Hesher on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. What an amazing show so far. If you missed any of it, you'll definitely want to go to tntradio.live and find the episodes up there. The episode archive is right there for you. Everything we do up here at TNT available for you at your convenience. All right, here's a grim headline out of Texas. I was looking for something out of my state today, so here's another one for you. Texas man hit and killed a pedestrian but didn't realize it until he found the body later on the roof of his car. How does that happen? Robbie Cox, Gregg County Justice of the Peace for Precinct 4, said that he was called about 7:14 a.m. on Friday in Longview. Cox said that the pedestrian stepped out in front of the vehicle and the driver could not stop before hitting the person. He knocked him, this is a quote, he knocked him, the pedestrian, through his windshield on top of his car, and the car went on to work. He knew he hit something, but didn't know what. Then he got out of his car and saw his body hanging on the top of his car, and I guess that's when the police department got involved. Cox also said the man was pronounced dead at about 8 a.m. The identity has not been released, but police believe he may have been a homeless person. Wow, that is pretty grim, folks. So what's going on here? The Texas Department of Transportation reported that 841 people died in 2021 from accidents involving pedestrians and bicyclists. The department added that the state had not had one day without a death on their streets since November 7th of the year 2000, nearly 22 years ago. A report from the nonprofit Governors Highway Association found that there had been a record number of pedestrian fatalities in 2021, an estimated 7,485 people. Wow, that is heartbreaking and unacceptable, said the association's executive director, Jonathan Adkins, in a news release. He also added, quote, the pandemic has caused so much death and damage, it's frustrating to see even more lives needlessly taken due to dangerous driving. So be careful out there, everybody. It's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Those numbers are staggering. It wasn't so much the grim clickbaitiness of this headline here that brought me to it. It was what I just read to you right there. Those numbers. 7,485 pedestrian fatalities just last year alone in just this state. What is going on there? Well, you know, if this one is a case study, maybe the homeless problem is a part of this. Maybe this plays a factor in it. I don't know. Something to think about. Food for thought. Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio? Do you think we're doing a good job? Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Gitter? Just do us a favor and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk.
Agreeing on the fundamental.
We can't trust any politician.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you for joining me again today, folks. It's been quite the show. I really appreciate your time listening to the program. Now, our final guest for today is a senior fellow and director at the Center on Entrepreneurial Innovation at the Independent Institute. He received his PhD in economics from George Mason University, and he has served as chief economist at the Illinois Policy Institute, director of business and economic studies at the Pacific Research Institute, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution, and founding publisher and contributing editor of Economic Issues. He has appeared on NPR, Fox Business, CNBC, C-SPAN, CNN, and radio stations across the U.S. So go to independent.org to visit his work on the web. He's the author of California Dreaming, Lessons on How to Resolve America's Public Pension Crisis. His name is Lawrence McQuillan. Lawrence, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm great, and I'm very pleased that you're able to join us today. So Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell the audience a little bit about you if they haven't seen you before.
Well, I'm a senior fellow at the Independent Institute in Oakland, California. And there I'm project director for a project called the California Golden Fleece Awards, which highlight and expose waste, fraud, and abuse in California state and local government. It's a target-rich environment, as you can imagine. There's a lot of waste and abuse in California government. So I do a series of studies on that. And one of the ones that we got a lot of attention on is two studies that we did on California wildfires and the mismanagement of forest land in California. The most recent one is called California Wildfires, Key Recommendations to Prevent Future Disasters. And it's chock full of recommendations. Some of them have been implemented and some of them haven't. But unfortunately, you know, the wildfire problem in California and throughout Western United States actually is still, you know, a serious, deadly threat, unfortunately.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was looking through your work before the show today and I came across one. Your name sounded familiar to me. And when I came across one, I was like, oh, okay. I know Lawrence. And it was the one that you did. It's in 2017 and it was the California Golden Fleece Award for the California Department of Water Resources for fraud and abuse in their reckless mismanagement of the Oroville Dam where the spillways all collapsed. And, you gave them the award for suboptimal maintenance and design. It was a great, great Golden Fleece award there. That's kind of a neighboring area to where I grew up. So,
familiar
with that location. Yeah. So I remember when that one came out, I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, that was a tragic crisis. It literally came within probably hours of the entire dam collapsing. Instead, the spillways collapsed, which still led to major flooding downstream, loss of buildings, but it could have been even worse. And it was all due to improper and suboptimal maintenance of the dam, what we called in the report patch and pray maintenance, for years, where they didn't do proper inspections. It was shoddy workmanship. It was just a disaster waiting to happen, and eventually it did happen.
Yeah, I watched a documentary about it, and they were talking about the way that those spillways were originally built. Like, that thing was basically built to fail. They completely left out, it's been a while since I watched it, but they did not put in the engineering qualities that would allow water to get underneath it and not destroy it, if I kind of recall at a high level.
Yeah, that's right. There. Yeah,
major
bad. Like seepage, which weakened the structure over time. And yeah, it was designed incorrectly from the beginning. One civil engineer said that his graduate students could have detected how poorly it was designed. and it allowed water to seep through the cracks and then undermine the foundation over time, where, you know, the foundation underneath the spillways eventually gave way. And also the drainage systems along the sides also was improper. So it was exactly that. I mean, it was designed to fail from the very beginning, and ultimately it did.
Yeah. And that poor county, I think Oroville Dam is in Butte County, right? Same county as the town Correct. That burned down, Paradise.
Paradise. Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. That whole Northern California area has been devastated by wildfires the last 3-4 years.
It really has. And I've family that lives out there, family and friends. That's pretty, you know, Sierra Nevada foothills is one of my old stomping grounds. So, there've been a number of times where we didn't know what was going to happen. One of the fires they had in 17 or 18, the Cal Fire, they set up their base of operations in my mom's driveway, because she was her house is top of a hill, and the fire was, you know, approaching the house. I mean, they stopped the fire at the back porch pretty much. So I know just how scary this stuff can be. I've got a listener out there, him and his brother, who lost a house in Paradise and then 2 years later lost one at another location in Butte County. They had the, I forget the name of the other fire, but it burned down one of those entire sort of, you know, gated communities around a small lake or something like that. They lost two houses. They lost everything once and then, you know, had to deal with that and then got a new place and then that one burned down. So I just, I really have a lot of empathy for those people out there dealing with all this stuff. So with regard to fires, what is going on there? Let me, I'm just going to ask you a real basic question. I have a whole bunch of opinions and stuff of my own, but what is the deal with the fires in California? Because some people say, oh, we have this all the time, Santa Ana winds, blah, blah, blah. But I remember when I was a kid and a young adult in California, PG&E used to always be out limbing trees and, you know, having trucks carrying around, you know, wood chippers and stuff like that. They used to really put a lot of attention into the surrounding foliage around the lines and everything. And then somewhere around year 2000, I stopped seeing that. Is that a factor or what do you think's going on generally?
Yeah, well, what's happened is literally over the last 100 years, the agencies, both in the federal government and also the state of California level, have had a policy of rapid suppression of every fire. In fact, the National Forest Service had a motto that we put out every fire by 10 a.m. the following day. So the plan has been to put these fires out quickly, but also at the same time, the environmental groups have limited or even eliminated the ability to do reasonable, proper forest management of the land by removing, you know, the overgrowth, the dead trees, the dead brush, clear it out, and do these fuel reduction projects that are required. So you've had a combination of fires being put out rapidly, but at the same time, not thinning the fires as they should have for over 100 years. And as a result, California's fire forest land is literally a tinderbox. It's extremely densely overgrown. Estimates are like in the 1800s, you had about 50 trees per acre in California. And today you have upwards of 500 trees per acre and millions, about 173 million trees in California have died over the last 20 years. So you have these dead and dying trees just waiting to be ignited. And then to get to your other point about PG&E, it's true since about, you know, 2000, late 90s, early 2000s, more and more of PG&E's capital has gone into green energy rather than doing the prevention, you know, trimming the trees around their wires and that sort of thing, eliminating the fuels around their wires. And as a result, more and more money has gone to like wind and solar rather than doing this preventative maintenance that has to be done. And as a result, you basically have cans of kerosene being stored underneath these power lines, as I put it, because there's just so much fuel that should be removed that hasn't been. And it is PG&E's responsibility to make sure that there's a, you know, a certain amount of space around their wires that are clear, but they haven't been doing it. In recent years, for example, they've only spent about a third of the budget that's been allocated for clearing vegetation around their lines. So they're not even spending what's been allocated. And in addition, as I mentioned, you know, more and more of the money is being siphoned off for green energy, you know, windmills and that sort of thing, that as we've learned with the rolling blackouts, isn't providing the energy that California needs anyways.
Yeah, it's really not. The whole green energy thing, you know, boy, they sold that to us hard in California. They still sell it to us hard in California. But how's it working out? I mean, what you just laid out right there, it's that really explains a lot.
Yeah, it's not working out, both in terms of supplying adequate electricity to Californians, but also in terms of providing, you know, safe conditions for the communities that are served by PG&E. And it's also a problem in Southern California too, don't get me wrong. You know, San Diego Gas and Electric has also had problems. So, and SoCal Edison has had problems. So it's not just PG&E, but because the terrain and the geography and the conditions are much different in Northern California than Southern California, it has been a greater wildfire risk up there.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely has. I feel for the firefighters up there. I know they're fighting a lot of fires. I got to take a station break here, Lawrence. So stand by, and we'll be right back. We'll talk a little bit more about it. I'm keenly interested in this topic here, and I also want to talk to you about your book, California Dreaming. So we'll come back and we'll do that after a quick break here with today's news talk.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
German wealth depended to a large extent on this cheap energy that Germany got since at least the 60s, 70s from Russia while producing high quality material. So increasing from raw material to elaborated material. That is the foundation of the German economic miracle. 30% of the energy consumption they needed from Russia was always a thorn in the side of the Americans. So what we have now is that, for example, our Minister of Defense, Mrs. Lamprecht, said that Germany needs to take a more important role internationally. It should become a world power. And on the other hand, when they needed to be decisive in the Minsk agreements, they did nothing. There was no intention to press Ukraine into obeying the agreement. They bombed and shelled Donetsk, Luhansk for 8 years, and Germany did nothing really. They were not capable or not willing. I don't know.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you. Involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, I'm joined by Lawrence McQuillan. You can go to independent.org. and pick up his book, California Dreaming, Lessons on How to Resolve America's Public Pension Crisis. Lawrence, welcome back. So with regards to California and the fires, before we move on here, how do we fix this particular one? Is this strictly a Green New Deal sort of thing? Are they not spending what's allocated for fuel reduction and upgrades and maintenance? Are they not doing that because they're expecting that, you know, they're looking forward and they see that, you know, if they spend all that money on this stuff instead of where the government wants them to go, which is, you know, windmills and solar, you know, is it strictly a boardroom decision? And what do you think about that, considering like this actually ends, you know, people have died because of these policies?
Well, I think if you look at the mega fires, you know, the biggest fires, most of those were started by PG&E's equipment. So right there is one spot that we should target. And of course, PG&E could do more. For example, they could do more undergrounding of their power lines, which they have promised to underground 10,000 miles of their power lines over the next decade, which is good. But they could also insulate more of their power lines so that if they did fall to the ground, they wouldn't create, or the lines touch, they wouldn't create the sparks and start fires. They could transition to more metal poles, which are much better than wood poles in terms of standing upright during severe weather. So they could do what we just were talking about, just the day-to-day dirty, tedious task of removing the vegetation around their equipment and doing better inspections. PG&E's got kind of lazy about inspections, so they increasingly did helicopter inspections rather than climbing the line and climbing the towers and looking at the connections in the lines. If they had done that for Paradise, in the Paradise area, I think they could have prevented that fire, because it was literally a part that was 100 years old that cost less than a dollar 100 years ago that failed, a C clamp, it's called, that caused the Paradise fire and killed, you know, over 80 people. So they got very lazy in terms of their inspection. So that's the power company side of things. But in terms of the public policy side, it would be great if property owners and communities had a lot more say about land management in those communities rather than the environmental groups, because the environmental groups always want to put an end to this, you know, human intervention into nature, and they don't want to do the proper, reasonable forest management, the thinning and the reduction of fuels that need to happen. Either we're going to do it or Mother Nature is going to do it, but it's going to get done, and it'd be much better if we did it, because then we could control what happens and we won't see these devastating fires. So I think we need to do a lot more forest management and forest thinning. The more say that, you know, communities and property owners and local communities will have on this would be great, because the feds drag their feet, and also the state government officials drag their feet. So they'd rather put the money into other projects like green energy and not do the forest management that's needed. So relying on federal bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. to do their job is, I think, not going to be, we're not going to see the urgency to clear the forest the way it needs to be done. And so I think I would love to see a lot more power and control shifted to the local communities in order to get these projects done, and allow them to partner with logging companies, for example, to have contracts in place to thin the forest. And at the same time, the logging companies could benefit from harvesting some of the timber in those areas. So I'd like to see a transition towards more local control.
Yeah. Let's get big government out of there, and let's take some of the power and the weight away from some of these environmental agencies. I mean, if their policies are leading to people, you know, a decline in people's lives, and decline may not even be a strong enough word, because we are talking about situations where people have died or lost their homes. And, you know, now we're back into a water issue in California. They're, you know, and that one really bugs me. I was reading an article on Air a week or two ago. It was about a year old, I think, but it was from F. William Engdahl. And he was talking about how the, I don't have it to hand, so I can't give you the name of the environmental agency, but he was talking about how one of the environmental agencies around there, after the last drought, I guess the reservoirs all filled up again in 2018, 2019, something like that, after the last drought. And the environmental wackadoos, they said, well, we got to let a bunch of this water go, because there's a chance that maybe approximately 1,000 rare salmon will survive better if we just dump half of our reservoirs into the ocean. So, you know, they're going around now telling people it's your fault for driving SUVs and for breathing and eating cows that fart, that we're having a water problem here, when they let half of the water out, you know, for the sake of maybe 1,000 fish in lieu of, you know, 40,000 Californians.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The fish and the frogs and the turtles, they have priority over the water rights in California. They come first over people, unfortunately. And that's exactly what's happened. they've sent more and more water out to sea, and instead that water is not being used as it should be by farms and, you know, residences in California.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big problem, and people are starting to realize it, you know, and, you know, I can't speak for you, but I'm guessing I might be here when I say this for myself personally. I love nature. I don't like the idea of pollution. I don't like the idea of, you know, destroying the natural habitat, but we've gone way, way beyond that. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize, oh, hold on. This is not, this climate cult thing is exactly that. It's turned into a cult, and you're not allowed to have any sort of nuanced perspective on it. And again, there you go. That's the narrative or the government or whatever going too far and probably shooting themselves in the foot, because a lot of environmentalists are realizing now, wait a minute, I can be a real environmentalist by not going along with these insane policies that government environmentalists are putting out. And I'll take your thoughts on that on the other side of a quick break here. We'll be right back, everybody. You're listening to Today's News Talk.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines.
Hurricane Ian has been battering Cuba all morning with 125 mile per hour sustained winds and could become a Category 4 by the time it hits Florida's Gulf Coast tomorrow into Thursday. Tens of thousands of Russians have flooded neighboring Central Asian countries in the past week, leaving governments such as Kazakhstan and Mongolia with few resources to process the sudden and growing migrant wave of men fleeing Russia's military conscription.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
My guest is Lawrence McQuillan. You can find him at independent.org. He's the author of California Dreaming, Lessons on How to Resolve America's Public Pension Crisis. And we're talking about, we got started talking about the Golden Fleece Awards, which I highly recommend you folks check out. Over on YouTube, you can find that channel at Independent Institute. The YouTube channel is called Independent Institute, and you can find Lawrence up there giving out these wonderful awards. I love the concept here. We're giving out Golden Fleece Awards for when corrupt idiots try to fleece the public. It's a great concept, Lawrence. Welcome back to the show. Anything else you want to say about public policy, green energy, forest fires, liquid natural gas becoming our new big export to Europe? Anything along those lines before we
before the break, whether it's forest management or water management, balance is important. And the environmental groups don't understand that. I mean, they're just all for one side rather than the other. And a good indication of that, we talked about proper forest management, thinning of the forests in California and also other Western states. And about 50% of those projects over the last few years have been litigated by environmental groups. So they either stopped the project completely or they slowed it down. And as you know, I mean, if you slow down a project in Northern California, you just increase the probability that that area is going to burn eventually. So they've been very irresponsible, reckless, one-sided. But unfortunately, they've been able to capture the major environmental agencies and government agencies throughout, not only at the federal level, but at the California level, to prevent this type of necessary responsible forest management that needs to happen in California. And as a result, we keep seeing these mega fires, and we'll probably see more of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like you can set your watch by them almost, or put them on your calendar at this point, you know, and just waiting for it each year. I had to actually get a new cell phone app. Let me see what it is. Maybe I can shout it out and someone might get some benefit out of it. It's called Watch Duty. And on that app, I can go to it and I can just look at the map, and I can zoom in. I was watching, kind of monitoring the mosquito fire out there in California, just northeast of the South Fork of the American River there near Placerville. Pretty cool app, actually. So folks, if you got family in California or you live in California, I don't get paid by this app or anything. I just found it to be pretty cool for monitoring this stuff. But yeah, I guess we're just going to keep seeing this until we can buck back against some of these environmental groups. And, you know, like I said, it's not that I want to see the entire state deforested for, you know, to enrich people or something like that. It's just sort of a common sense thing to say, hey guys, look, you know, it wasn't more than a decade or two ago where this wasn't happening quite so bad. And what's the difference? Well, we didn't have these reckless, litigious eco-cultists shutting down all the projects that had been keeping this, you know, the system running this whole time.
Yes, and also the transition, as we talked about earlier, you know, towards green, so-called green energy, has really siphoned off so much capital investment that would normally go to preventative steps by the utility companies. And now it's being siphoned off the windmills and solar panels. And unfortunately, not only is that not giving the power to Californians that they need, but it's also creating a much more hazardous condition throughout the state for wildfires.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, the rolling blackouts, that we've been experiencing, here's another thing that really pisses me off, to be quite frank. PG&E now has been, and to some extent the other companies, but PG&E is the big one on my radar simply because of where I lived, in California, always in Northern California. But they have taken to just preemptively shutting down power to thousands of people at once when the wind picks up, or when it gets cold and limbs might fall, or when it's hot and something might spark, or when there's a storm and there might be lightning. It's like they're doing all these things to, in a sense, protect themselves. I don't know how much, you know, it may stop a fire when they do that. But really, I feel like they're covering their own asses because they've gotten so much trouble over these things. You know, everybody's starting to figure out what's going on here, and we're kind of figuring out why it's going on in this conversation. So the fact that people are being handed austerity, you know, we got senior citizens that have the power off for 15 days in a freeze out, or have the power off for days at a time because of high winds or something like that, you know, that has caused some tenuous situations for a lot of people. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. What do you think about that? The whole, like, they just turn off the power all the time, man, for long periods of time. My sister had to go rescue my dad when he was frozen into his house last year or earlier this year. And it was 15 days before his power came back on.
Wow. Yeah, the PG&E calls these public safety power shutoffs. And as you mentioned, I mean, the idea behind it is to try to anticipate where you might have down power lines and then shut off power preemptively to those areas. But as you mentioned, I mean, it's not only extremely inconvenient, but it's life-threatening in some situations to have your power shut off. For example, if you require oxygen and things like that. So it's a very dangerous situation. I mean, the jury's out in terms of whether or not it's really prevented any fires. I mean, of course, PG&E is going to claim it does. I'm very skeptical that it really has done much other than create kind of this, I don't know, they're trying to create this PR image that they're trying to prevent these fires, but in the meantime, you lose your power. And so they've just angered a whole lot of people who lose their power. So, I mean, bottom line, there is no way around just doing the day-to-day nitty-gritty work that needs to be done in terms of fuel reductions. And, you know, they claim that, you know, they'll do fewer of these public safety power shutdowns as fuel loads are reduced. And we can only hope so. But in the meantime, as you mentioned, I mean, this can be life-threatening for some people, and it's terrible public relations in terms of the customers who do see their power turned off. So I'm very skeptical that it's really prevented fires. But as you mentioned, I mean, PG&E is trying everything it can not to face more liability for huge mega fires, which it looks like they will this year, again, for a couple fires. Although we were so far, we've been lucky in California. We haven't seen the you know, the massive fires that we have in years past, recent years past. So knock on wood. But again, October and November in the last few years have been some of the worst months for wildfires. So we're not out of the woods yet. And it could, we could still have you know, a major outbreak in October and November. So yeah, I mean, PG&E is trying whatever it can, but I think it's trying what really needs to be done much too little, which is just to do these fuel reduction plans and stick to it and spend all of the budgets that have been allocated for it, be consistent, be thorough, and keep doing it year after year after year. And maybe we'll see some turnaround in this problem, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it cheaper to not have the fires? Isn't it cheaper to just spend the budget on what it's for and not have the animosity of the public, you know, and have to have the media out there extending the company's virtue signal with their, oh, we're going to shut the power off to save everybody, it's for your own benefit. Well, you know, as someone with family members whose power is being turned off regularly, they're not seeing it as a virtue signal. They're seeing it as a failure,
right,
from the state, a failure from Pacific Gas and Electric, a failure by their legislators to not protect them from twisted environmental groups who are just interested in stopping any sort of development whatsoever. I don't know what they think they're going to accomplish with this. Making life so bad for the humans and to make it better for bugs and grasshoppers and turtles and tortoises. It just doesn't make any sense. But that's what they pound on us in the media and in school. So, you know, people are, of course, very pliable to it. And then there's also the cost of the power there. My goodness, when I was living there in 2012, 2013, I could not believe how much it cost to just nominally heat and cool my house that I was renting. It was upwards of like $500 a month, like more than a car payment for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so much of that is due to the green energy, which is very expensive.
But I thought it was going to save the planet. I thought it was going to make everything into a utopia. What's going on here? And now they're telling us that Gavin Newsom announced a couple weeks back that by 2035 or whenever they can do it, that we won't be able to buy normal combustion engines in California anymore. We're going to have to buy EVs. And then much to the chagrin of many people, they came out a couple days later and said, hey, guys, you can't charge your EVs between these hours. We just don't have enough power in the grid. And that's just such a tell, you know, like they totally let the cat out of the bag with that one. There's not going to be enough, you know, electric vehicles. There's not going to be enough people to afford electric vehicles. And there's not going to be enough power for everyone to charge their electric vehicles. And they're not going to be able to drive from Southern California to Northern California in a day anymore. They're going to have to stop and charge their car for 12 hours here and there. And they're telling us this is, you know, utopia. This is the way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fantasy land. I mean, obviously, they didn't think that through. We don't even have enough power right now for California. How are we going to charge all of these vehicles in the future with green energy? It's just a ridiculous idea. And, you know, like most of these utopian plans, they keep pushing back the date when they realize that they can't meet the original date that they put forward. And they just quietly kind of extend the deadline. And I have a feeling that's what they're going to do with this, just like they did with the high-speed rail project. You know, they keep saying, well, that's going to be done by 2025 or 2030. And that now it's more like 2050, something like that. But people, you know, they vote on these things, you know, they pay attention to it when they vote on them. And then they just kind of are in the background and they no longer follow it. They don't realize how expensive these projects are becoming and how far behind they really are in terms of meeting their expectations and deadlines. So, the public kind of drifts away onto other things and they don't pay attention to these things. And then they over time, they become captured by, environmental groups and the bureaucracy, and the costs just explode and the projects are just continually delayed and delayed. And that's what we've seen. Well, with water infrastructure too, we were expected to build more reservoirs with that $7 billion bond that I think it was in 2014 was passed by voters. And there hasn't been any ground broken on any reservoir since then. A lot of expensive plans and ideas, but very little actually helps your typical Californian.
Yeah, right. It's like, if you're a typical Californian and you're not really paying attention to all of the politics and the corruption and the trajectory of this whole Green New Deal, if you will, it's really easy to just go out and look at, if you're even voting out there. I know a lot of people in California don't even bother. It's very lackadaisical in some departments and some locations for some people, but that's changing. People are starting to activate and get interested in this stuff. But it's very easy. Traditionally, it's been very easy to go do the ballot, get the sticker. I voted today, and then boom, you're just done with politics for between 2 and 4 years. You don't really think about it. The next time you get engaged, well, you read the stuff, you click the right answer, the one that seems to be, based for the planet and whatever. And you get your sticker again, and you don't notice that in the meantime, all the fires you've experienced, all the dams breaking and corrupting that you've experienced, all the power outages you've experienced are all a direct result of the poor voting that happened last time. So it creates this like feedback loop essentially. But let me take one last quick break here and with the station, and we will be right back with Lawrence McQuillan, everybody, on today's News Talk.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Hey, all you comic book hero fans. Marvel has a new one in the works. It's Captain America, New World Order, which is scheduled to be released in 2024. But the controversy's already underway. You see, the addition of a character, Sabra, an Israeli superheroine, to be played by Israeli actress Syra Haas, is more than some pro-Palestinian groups can take. The character Sabra made her first appearance in The Incredible Hulk in 81. She has superpowers and works for the Mossad, Israel's intel agency. Her costume is blue and white, Israel's colors, complete with a big Star of David. Her son was killed by Palestinian terrorists and she went rogue to bring them to justice. Simply outrageous, isn't it? Well, to appease the pro-Palestinian objections, Marvel tells Variety, while our characters are inspired by the comics, they are always freshly imagined, and the studio will be taking a new approach to the character of Sabra. So what will a reimagined, woke, politically correct version of Sabra look like? I really have no interest in finding out. It all makes me sick. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again. Then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Mainstream media censors, smears, and intimidates those telling the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right. Hey, wow. This show has gone by so fast. What a powerful show today. As we close out into the last minutes here, we've got Lawrence McQuillan joining us. He's the author of California Dreaming, Lessons on How to Resolve America's Public Pension Crisis. He's also got a lot of other topics that he is very versed in speaking about. So I recommend you check out his books and go to independent.org to visit him on the web. And of course, watch those Golden Fleece Awards. That's a little bit of fun, that adds a little bit of fun, a little bit of levity into the kind of stuff that we're into. I know it's not always fun and funny, but hey, if we can't have some gallows humor while these people try to destroy our states, I don't know how we're going to get through it. So, you know, I want to thank you for the Golden Fleece awards. It's really a nice little piece to add to our media environment, Lawrence.
Thank you, Brian. Yeah, it's fun, but also, unfortunately, you know, we tackle so many crises and tragedies that so many other states seem to avoid. And California seems to go from one crisis to the next crisis, and they never really resolve the past crises, and they keep coming around to bite us. And other states, they don't have the same problems. For example, I mean, Georgia has, you know, it's very extremely wooded state with lots of forest land, and they don't have nearly the problems in terms of wildfires that we have here. And the reason is because they're very quick to issue permits to property owners to do any kind of forest management and thinning on their property. In fact, their goal is to issue you a permit within 24 hours if you request it to do some sort of fuel reduction project on your land. In California, you know, it takes weeks, months, years in some cases if it's litigated, just to do reasonable things that every other state, it seems like, can do quickly and efficiently and prevent the problems that California has. California's just been captured at, you know, every level of government by all of these groups that work against the interests of kind of your common, typical Californian who wants things, you know, problem solved and solved efficiently. And that's just not the way the state works. I mean, housing is another perfect example of that. You know, housing costs keep skyrocketing and you can't get anything built because so many stakeholders can veto just reasonable development projects to build an apartment or a home somewhere.
Yeah, and that goes to that whole they're trying to insert this this concept into the public lexicon of stakeholder capitalism. They make it sound like sustainable development, right? It sounds good by the bumper sticker. I'm into that. But then you look into like what it actually means, and it's like, oh wait, that means there's stakeholders, like moneyed interests that are not necessarily that are almost 100% of the time not any sort of elected officials. They're just stakeholders who have financial stakeholdings, and it's like they grab power, and then once they have power, it gives them greater control, and then once they have that control, they can keep the power, and it sort of just sets up this sort of self-licking ice cream cone sort of thing, and you just can't get anything done anymore. Like you said, you can't get anything built. There's a set of housing in Nevada County, one of my home counties, where they had this land set aside for like over a decade, I think, some maybe even longer, to build some what they were going to call low-income housing. I'm not sure if that's the exact term they were using, but something along those lines, like affordable housing, but, you know, single-family unit homes. And 10, 12, 15 years, finally, they get started on it, and the plan is to build like 250 houses that you can start getting into the market at around 450. But of course, those numbers are a couple years old, so now that may have gone up even more. But it was crazy to me to see that, like, that takes so long and have it all advertised in a certain way, and then to see it actually happen. And it's like, well, the stakeholders must have stepped in here and changed all that in a way that it benefits them.
Yeah, and the way they do it with housing is so-called environmental impact reports. And then, those are required. They do them, they release them, and then they're reviewed by the local community government. Any environmental group can litigate it. And once it gets into litigation, I mean, it can take years to resolve and finally get a final environmental impact report approved by the local planning commission or planning department, so the project can move forward. So that's a area where many projects are typically either delayed or stopped entirely, is by filing litigation against the environmental impact reports that are issued, and anybody can do it. You can do it anonymously, in fact, in California. You can file these lawsuits and claim, you know, that it was either report was done incorrectly or they didn't consider certain factors. And it just delay. And if I'm a developer, why would I want to stick around for 10 or 15 years and hold on to this land and just fight these lawsuits continuously when I can go to Arizona or Texas and build, you know, 20 developments a year there during the same amount of time? So developers just get fed up and they leave and they go to other states and build there.
I'm feeling it. You know, I moved out here to Texas, and it's difficult for me to even describe how quickly it happens when I see a piece of property leveled, you know, and as you see the construction sign come up. It is staggering how quickly a condominium unit or a subdivision can pop up here. I mean, it's nuts. We actually moved into this house that we're renting, and we had it, and it's in this like subdivision, you know, this total suburban area. And there was maybe three other houses next to us. And within, I don't know, 5 months or something, we had an entire subdivision. We watched it pop up around us. It was amazing to see. And it's crazy. They're just putting these things up all over Texas. So it's like, not only do you have a lot of the citizens leaving places like California and New York and Chicago, you know, other places, but we also, like you're saying here, we've got the construction industries coming here too, because they don't have all these insane, you know, they can actually build, they can do a project, they can do it quickly and turn it around and make a profit.
Yeah. And if you penciled out a project like 10 years ago and got finance for it, if the project is delayed 10 years later, well, that project is very unlikely to pencil out financially anymore, because not only of rising costs, inflation, and all that, but as you mentioned, so many construction workers have gone to other states that now trying to bid those workers away and build something in California is, you know, you're probably looking at a 30 to 60% increase in construction costs over the last 10 years. So any project that's delayed also means that you're also increasing the cost of building that project eventually. And you might not be able to get the financing anymore for that project like you could 10 years earlier. And so that also upends a lot of projects that don't go forward, is just because they no longer financially make any sense to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you've got all these changing, you know, it's like new battles coming up from the environmental groups. You know, you can get like, you know, 3/4 of the way into getting the project approved, you know, maybe even broke some ground already. And then all of a sudden, you know, some blue haired people show up with their lawyers, and it's like, well, the environmental group's here. We found a spotted sparrow or a turtle or something that, you know, our university scientists have told us is now rare. So all this stuff you're doing for people and for business, well, that needs to stop immediately.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, that's exactly how it works in California. That's why it's nearly impossible to get anything done that's helpful to your average ordinary person in California.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty bad in that regard. But you know what? Because of people like yourself and many others that come on this show, we're getting the word out. And I think, you know, there's a lot of things that we can do other than what I did, which was move out of that place as fast as possible, go to another place, and then start screaming about it on a microphone. I've got my role, certainly. But for the larger, you know, group of, you know, of however many Californians are left, 40 million or something like that. There's a lot that, yeah, it is shrinking. It's shrinking fast.
It is shrinking.
They can't even get enough U-Haul trucks to get out of there fast enough.
Exactly. Yeah.
but as far as like the trajectory in California, there is some hope there. I'm talking to a number of people on the show like yourself and others who are looking at ways to fix it, you know? So, you got about 1 minute left. I hear the intro or the outro music starting here. So, please give us any words of positive inspiration. Tell people where to find your books and you on the web and everything. And we'll come back. I'll have you back. Well, I want to talk more about, we didn't get to talk about the public pension crisis, and I do want to do that.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, there is reason to be hopeful. And even people moving out of the state convey a strong message to politicians in California that things have to change. You're going to depopulate the entire state. When the big corporate headquarters of Silicon Valley start moving out, which they've actually started doing, I think that's going to send a very strong message that we need to change the policies in California.